Thank you.
The next case today is Hall versus Norfolk Southern.
If I may proceed, Your Honor. Oh.
All right, counsel, you may proceed.
Hi. Stephen Garmisa here for Mr. Merrill Hall. Your Honor, this involves a case where a complaint was filed on behalf of Mr. Merrill Hall alleging that he was injured in the Elkhart Yard. He filed a complaint. The complaint was under the Federal Employers Liability Act. Mr. Hall, it turns out, was at the time of the accident an employee of Conrail, which had at one time owned that Elkhart Yard. But by the time the complaint was filed, the Elkhart Yard had been acquired by Norfolk Southern. And in the 2 or 3 years after the accident, and I believe it was up to three years because it was a three-year statute of limitations under the FVLA, Mr. Hall's attorney, Mr. Richard Haydu, was getting letters on Norfolk Southern letterhead saying, let's talk about the case, we'll enroll Mr. Hall in a Norfolk Southern rehabilitation program. When Mr. Haydu drafted the complaint shortly before the statute of limitations ran, he drafted a complaint against Norfolk Southern, which was identified as the defendant, and it said defendant was negligent, and it was Mr. Hall was working for defendant at the time of his injury in the Elkhart Yard. Mr. Hall was injured as a result of negligence by the defendant. So defendant all the way through, the negligent employer was identified as Norfolk Southern, the only railroad that was mentioned in that complaint. What happened was Norfolk Southern was served. It appeared. It filed a motion to dismiss stating that at the time of the accident, Mr. Hall was an employee of Conrail, not Norfolk Southern. And under the FVLA, it says a railroad that has an employee who is injured as a result of the railroad's negligence can sue the railroad. And since it only applies to employers and Norfolk Southern wasn't the employer at the time, they moved to dismiss. So Mr. Haydu filed a motion to amend. And the motion to amend acknowledged that there was a mistake in the initial complaint as to the identity of the negligent employer and corrected that by alleging that Mr. Hall worked for Conrail at the time. But then Mr. Haydu recalled that in a similar case, Norfolk Southern had admitted that it had assumed liability for an injury, that case was a wrongful death case involving a Conrail employee who was killed in the Elkhart Yard before Norfolk Southern acquired the Elkhart Yard. So Mr. Haydu, in drafting the first version of the amended complaint, alleged that Norfolk Southern had assumed liability for accidents to Conrail employees in the Elkhart Yard before the acquisition. Then Norfolk Southern said, no, that's not correct. Even though we made that admission in the B. Howey case, we really didn't assume liability. So Mr. Haydu drafted a second version of the amended complaint. And then, by the way, there was no ruling on the first version of the amended complaint. So all we had on the table was the complaint that was in effect was the initial complaint that clearly made a mistake as to the identity of the negligent employer. And so Mr. Haydu drafted a second amended complaint, which corrected the mistake in the first complaint by alleging that Mr. Hall was a Conrail employee at the time of the accident and that he was injured as a result of Conrail's negligence, and sought to bring in Conrail as a new party, and also sought to hold Norfolk Southern liable under an assumed liability theory so that that could be sorted out. The magistrate judge ruled that there was no mistake The key question was whether or not there was a mistake in the initial complaint as to the identity of the negligent employer. And the magistrate judge, I think the magistrate judge, and the only way it makes sense to me, and I didn't realize it until yesterday when I was rereading everything for the umpteenth time, I think the magistrate judge looked at the first version of the amended complaint, the one that did allege that he was a Conrail employee and that Norfolk Southern had assumed liability, and he took that as the initial complaint, because even the district court acknowledged that the magistrate judge made a mistake of fact when the magistrate judge stated that the initial complaint identified Conrail as the negligent employer, but nevertheless named Norfolk Southern as the sole defendant under an assumed liability theory. And that never made sense to me until I realized he had to be looking at the first version of the amended complaint, because when you look at the initial complaint, the only railroad that's mentioned is Norfolk Southern. And it's Norfolk Southern, as it says, Norfolk Southern is identified as defendant, and then throughout that short complaint, it says defendant was, Mr. Hall was working for defendant, Mr. Hall was injured while working for defendant at the Elkhart Yard, defendant was liable in the following respects. Well, the only railroad mentioned in the initial complaint was Norfolk Southern. So there was clearly a mistake as to the identity of the party, the railroad that was intended to be named as the negligent employer.
Is this really a mistake as to identity? Because the identity of both of these entities was known. It's a question, perhaps, of who's responsible.
It was not known when he drafted the complaint because he forgot. And that's what 15C is aimed at. Forgetting is a mistake, too. And he just forgot. And Mr. Haidu, who drafted the initial complaint.
Okay.
And Mr. Haidu, he had worked for Chicago Northwestern before it was acquired by Union Pacific. He's been an FELA lawyer, a defense and plaintiffs for almost his entire career. And he knows better. He knows you sue the employer, the railroad that employed the person at the time. By the time he remembered when he drafted those complaints, he remembered getting all those letters on Norfolk Southern letterhead stationery saying, let's talk about it before you file a complaint, and let's there were like a dozen letters over the three-year period.
Well, that's because the acquisition called for Norfolk Southern to essentially be the claims processing agent for Conrail, even though Conrail retained liability.
Right. And Mr. Haidu just made a mistake, and he forgot.
Would you take a stab at attempting to reconcile the Woods case with the Wood case?
Those were the cases on mistake?
Right, and it seems to me that some of the case law in this circuit goes in different directions on the interpretation of 15C and how expansively to interpret a mistake as to identity, whether it really applies only to mistakes as to the actual identity of the party or mistakes as to which parties might be liable?
Well, I think that the difference, I mean, what's the proper rule is what it comes down to, and I think that a mistake means mistake. The magistrate judge took the position that mistake was a legal term of art and that it has a precise, and it doesn't have its common definition. And I think that's wrong. I mean, they use mistake, and it clearly means a mistake is a mistake.
Well, it's not just any old mistake. It's a mistake as to the identity of the proper party.
Right.
And so the question turns on whether this is a mistake as to the identity of the proper party or a mistake as to understanding which party is liable, which railroad is liable. Those are two different things.
Well, if the initial complaint, if let's put it this way. If the initial complaint was actually the first version of the amended, the first proposed amended complaint, that's the one that that actually named the two railroads and said that Conrail was the negligent employer, but Norfolk Southern assumed liability, then the magistrate judge would be absolutely correct. That would be a case, if that was the initial complaint, I agree that would be a case where there was no mistake as to the identity of the railroad you intended to sue, because you knew, you demonstrated that you knew about Conrail in that complaint, and you said, but we're suing Norfolk Southern instead. Now, the reason he did that is Norfolk Southern had already was already a party in front of the court, and so he didn't think at the time there was a reason to go out and name Conrail, because Norfolk Southern had assumed liability in this other case. So, I believe that any fair, objective reading of the actual initial complaint shows that when you look at it, all the references to defendant, which is identified as Norfolk Southern, Hall worked for defendant, Hall was injured, a defendant operated the Elkhart Yard, defendant was negligent in the following respects, and there's no reference anywhere to any other railroad.
Norfolk Southern is identified in the first complaint, the initial complaint, as your client's employer.
As defendant. It says, in other words, the way it's drafted, because all of the body of the complaint just refers to defendant. Defendant was Mr. Hall worked for defendant. Mr. Hall worked in the defendant's Elkhart Yard. Defendant was negligent in the following respects. So then it comes down to the question: well, who was intended to be named as defendant in that case, in that initial complaint? And the initial complaint refers to, it says, Norfolk Southern, and then, you know, in parentheses, defendant. So to me, the only fair objective reading is, aha, that means that the references to defendant in the initial complaint mean Norfolk Southern. And it's clear that's wrong. That was a mistake. When you allege that he worked for defendant, Norfolk Southern, no, we all agree now he worked for Conrail. And we all agree now that at the time of the accident, Norfolk Conrail operated and owned the Elkhart Yard, and that he intended to allege that it was Conrail's negligence that injured him, his employer's negligence. So I don't think we get into the difference between the Wood and the Woods case. I respectfully say this is clearly under any interpretation of mistake, whether it has its common ordinary definition or a term of art definition, this was clearly a case where that initial complaint contained a mistake as to the identity of the employer that was negligent.
You're into your rebuttal time rather seriously, you know.
Then I will shut up and sit down and reserve my time. Thank you.
Mr. Blasey.
Good morning, and may it please the court. My name is Jeffrey Blasey, and I represent Norfolk Southern Railway Company in this matter. And need to begin by correcting a couple of things that were misleading about the argument you just heard. The first is that it's conceded by Mr. Hall that at the time the initial complaint was filed, he knew full well who his employer was, which was Conrail. There was an attorney lien letter sent to Conrail a couple of years before the complaint was filed. On page 46 of the brief filed in this matter, Hall states, of course Hall knew his employer was Conrail. After all, his attorney's lien was sent to Conrail. In the initial motion to amend, the grounds given for amending the complaint was not that I forgot who the employer was, that I was confused. The allegation is, what I neglected to say was that I was suing on the theory that Norfolk Southern was a successor in interest. That's explicit in the motion to amend. I neglected to include the allegation that Norfolk Southern was a successor in interest. That's what I meant to do. And hence, here's my amended complaint that does that, which you just heard was conceded would not satisfy Rule 15C if the second complaint had been the first. Well, that's exactly what he was trying to do. Clarify his intentions in the first complaint, and it's those sort of mistakes of facts of who is liable that are not permitted to be related back under Rule 15C. The Rule 15C requirement of a misidentification or a mistake as to identity has to do not with someone who has taken the limitations period, investigated the claim, and come to conclusions concerning the facts and the relationship to the parties, but chooses to sue one party and not another. That's a choice based on facts. Now, if your facts are mistaken, that's the sort of mistake that Rule 15C does not permit relation back. If you do your investigation and you identify who you believe is responsible for your injuries, who the actors were, and you screw up the implementation of the suing, basically, if there is a misidentification in the pleading, you call them by a wrong name entirely so that the person you've named doesn't exist, although the real party's before you, it doesn't permit that real party to say they said Inc. instead of Corp. and that person doesn't exist, therefore we're off the hook. It doesn't permit that. That's a misidentification of who you intended to sue. It also doesn't permit or allows, rather, relation back in some circumstances where you get the name wrong, you intended to sue X, and you get that name wrong, but you name someone else, perhaps a closely related corporation. That's not the case here. They appear and say, that's not us. You sued them. Relation back's permitted in those circumstances. But when you know who Conrail is, and you know who Norfolk Southern is, and your only confusion is who's liable under the facts, and you get that wrong, that's a mistake as to facts. That's not a misidentification of the identity of either party.
Would you try to take a stab at reconciling the Woods case and the Wood case and the other conflicting case law in this circuit? It seems to me that there is support for bringing in a party under 15C who was not named.
Well, that's what the second scenario that I mentioned is just that. You name a different party, perhaps with a similar name, when you intended to name a party that's not before the court. Well, that does bring another party.
That's not what we have in Woods, though. That was a case where the university was sued, and then later under 15C, there was an attempt to get relation back for individual defendants who were brought in after the statute had run.
Those are cases, capacity cases, that involve principal-agent relationships, which we really don't have here. And that's sort of a special species, I think, that the courts have allowed in this case, particularly when governmental entities are involved, because you knew who did you wrong, the university through this employee, and you didn't quite get the right legal capacity to sue right in terms of who you pointed the finger at, but basically you're suing the university that acted through its agent, and I think that's different in kind than what we're talking about here, where you have two unrelated entities. And that's, I've seen those cases, and that's the basis upon which I think you can distinguish them. It's not really a mistake of identity. You know who the university is, you know who the employee is. It's some kind of legal mistake as to who you have to sue exactly in what capacity.
Right, but it seems to me that case and others like it stand for the proposition that a mistake as to identity is given a broader construction than you're arguing in this case.
I think the Woods case is the outer limit, and as I said, is an interesting subcategory of cases under Rule 15C involving principal-agent relationships. That's as best as I can tell you how to distinguish that, because I don't think, if you just take the idea that I sue the wrong defendant and I get relation back, then you've got no limitations on adding a party.
There's successor liability cases from other circuits that are more on point?
They're directly on point, yes. The Rennie versus Omniflight Helicopters case out of the Fourth Circuit in 98 is one that I think is particularly on point and particularly analogous to the case before the court.
Unpublished opinion?
That is unpublished. There is the Wilson case, First Circuit 94, is published, which is a very similar case, again involving successor liability. And these square with the Wood case, the Seventh Circuit's Wood case, where lack of knowledge isn't enough. And that in this case, the court concluded Wilson merely lacked knowledge of the proper party. In other words, Wilson fully intended to sue the party he sued. He did so, but that party turned out to be the wrong party. We have no doubt that Rule 15C is not designed to remedy such mistakes. And I think that's exactly what we have here. He was informed with facts and made a decision as to whom to sue, and he got it wrong. Conrail remained in existence after certain of its assets were acquired. The plaintiff's counsel below has sued Conrail and Norfolk Southern in other cases. That's where he ended up in his third amended complaint. If there was some kind of oversight that where he didn't sue the right party, not misidentified, but failed to sue the right party, that was a mistake of counsel, to which there's other remedies, but not relation back under Rule 15C. There are two other issues in this case that were not addressed in the opening statements. I'm prepared to address those if the court would like, involving the authority of Magistrate Judge Radovich to rule on the issue in the first place. I think that's well established under the rules. And then also the preemption issue.
That's the issue of the summary judgment on the merits.
Summary judgment on the merits with respect to Norfolk Southern Railway Company, successor liability claim against Norfolk Southern Railway Company.
Go ahead.
That is a very simple idea. The Interstate Commerce Commission Termination Act gave the Surface Transportation Board exclusive authority over various aspects of railroad operations. And when, as it did here, the board approves acquisition of certain assets by two common carriers, when it approves that transaction, the parties to the transaction are exempt from all other laws as necessary to permit them to effectuate that transaction. In this case, the FELA claims were a retained liability of Conrail under the agreement, meaning that Conrail remained liable for them, not Norfolk Southern. That's an explicit term in the agreement that was indeed approved by the Surface Transportation Board. Consequently, the exemption applies, and Norfolk Southern is exempt from the common law successor liability, which is the basis of the claim, that might otherwise impose liability on it. It's as simple as that, and I think there's looking at the authority, because the claim directly contradicts the term of the contract, that ends the story, basically. Can't carry out the transaction if you permit a plaintiff to change the terms of it. The law is clear. There's no requirement for a specific finding of necessity with respect to a particular provision. You look at the agreement, and as a matter of law, it operates to trump certain laws. The Harris case, decided by the circus, is a good example of, I think, how you can deal with those sorts of cases. Where in the court in that case found that because there was no approval, there was no exemption. I'd like to make just a quick point about the issue of whether or not the first ruling denying the motion to amend was dispositive or not, or whether the magistrate judge had the authority to enter that opinion. I think the district court was correct that under the authority in this circuit, under the rules, he clearly had authority to rule on the issue. And most importantly, the ruling itself was not dispositive of the complaint before the court.
Categorically so under the rules.
Correct. As to the B. Howey case, Norfolk Southern does not concede that it admitted that it assumed FEA liability in that complaint or answer an unrelated case. It doesn't concede that point. I think it's ambiguous at best if you're trying to make the argument that the plaintiff's making in this case. It's a matter of public record what went on and who had what liabilities, and you have 3 years to determine those facts and to investigate them. And at the end of the day, that displaced some reliance on that ambiguous language in an unrelated case might explain why he sued NS, but doesn't explain why he didn't sue his employer, Conrail, who was the proper party under the FELA and who remained in existence after certain of his assets were acquired by Norfolk Southern. The ruling on the motion to amend, by the way, is subject to an abuse of discretion standard. And I think based upon the facts of the law that we've discussed, even considering some of the other authority that Your Honor mentioned, it cannot be said that the judge abused his discretion in denying the motion to amend Conrail after the statute of limitations had run. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Gamisa, how much time?
A
As to the difference between the Wood and the Woods case, I think though Wood or Wood one, the case has said that it only applies to a misnomer as to a party already before the court. That's a statement that's just not found in the text of Rule 15C. It says a mistake as to the identity of the party that you intended to sue. And if the court looks, again, at that initial complaint, it says over and over again that he was in the course of his employment by defendant, that at all pertinent times he was performing work for defendant, in connection with defendant's business, it was continuing duty of defendant as employer to use ordinary care. And all those references to defendant, it's clear that it meant that whoever drafted that, Mr. Haydu, was referring to defendant as Norfolk Southern, but he mistakenly thought Norfolk Southern was the negligent employer, the railroad that employed Mr. Hall on the date of the accident, and the employer that operated the Elkhart Yard at the time, and the employer that was negligent. So that was the mistake, and that's as clear as can be. As to the Surface Transportation Board's approval of the merger, I keep focusing on Judge Easterbrook's statement in the Harris case that, quote, necessary, like all, should be taken seriously. Only laws that would block the transaction give way. So all laws necessary to implement a merger are preempted. But as Judge Easterbrook's opinions, in my he doesn't waste words in my experience. And when he says necessary should be taken seriously, only laws that would block the transaction give way. Applying successor liability would not block the transaction because Norfolk Southern not only agreed to handle the claim, no matter whether it was Conrail or Norfolk Southern as named as defendant, they had unilateral authority to draw up to $5 million from a Conrail account to pay a settlement or a judgment. So it wouldn't block the transaction to apply successor liability. I would rest on my briefs for the remaining points.
Thank you. The case is taken under advisement.